Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I am in Peoria, Arizona. Been out the last couple days at the complex. Padres pitchers and catchers report on Wednesday. We're recording this on Tuesday back in San Diego. Union Tribune sports editor Jay Posner. Jay, year three of the Hot Lava Podcast, and I would say, you know, it's a little different. You know, year two was different than one, year three different than two in terms of going into spring training. Like, hey, you know what? They seem to be better, the Padres do. But also, how good are the Padres? Like, what do you think, Jay?
Well, I mean, at this time last year, they hadn't even signed Machado, if I remember correctly. And there was obviously great excitement after that was done. And there was great excitement, I think, for the first 4 months of how Machado played, and the last couple months, as did the rest of the team, he kind of fell apart. The team fell apart. We have a new manager to talk about, you know, which we've done in a couple of the offseason podcasts. But I don't know what to make of this team. I mean, I like to fall back on Vegas in these situations, and the over under I believe is around 82.5 or 83. Mm-hmm. To me, that seems about right. I mean, I don't see that as an automatic, okay, wow, I'm definitely taking the over, or I'm definitely taking the under. It seems like a good number.
I haven't done a dive into this, Jay. All I saw was a tweet, but that the Bakota projections came out today, and they have the Dodgers with 103 victories, and then the Diamondbacks and Padres with 79.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. The Dodgers at 102.5 officially on here.
Okay.
Padres at 79.3 and Arizona at 78.9 and then Colorado at 76.6. So not a lot of optimism among the projections for the NL West, and certainly not for the Padres being into contention, although it gives them an 18.5% chance of making the playoffs. I would think the Padres probably feel a little better about their team than, you know, 79 wins. I would think, you know, 83, like we talked about, 83. I don't want to say the Padres should take that and run, but at the same time, they did win 70 last year, and, you know, 84 would be a 20% increase. That's, to me, that's a lot. So if you could get into that low 80s thing, that would probably be a pretty good season if they were in the low 80s. To me, anyway.
Yeah, if you were to lose, you know, 9 of your last 11 and win 83, that's one thing. But it's hard to imagine too many scenarios where an 83-win Padres team isn't considered to have been, you know, obviously statistically and numerically, it's a vast improvement. What am I trying to say? But, like, that's a in these parts.
That would be a pretty good. I would agree. That would be
in terms of. You're climbing,
right?
You're climbing towards the build, because, you know, if they did that, a little bit with, you know, Mackenzie Gore getting some experience, which he almost certainly will at this level this year. Luis Patino, and for them to get to 83, it means, you know, probably Manny Machado had something of a bounce back here, which they're looking for. And Fernando Tatis was, you know, close to what he was, which is a question all in itself, you know, whether he'll have a 413 batting average on balls in play again.
Well, and they certainly need more than 83 games out of, or I forget the exact number, but more games out of Tatis. I mean, they need better play out of Eric Hosmer. They need someone to step up at second base. You know, they need to sort out center field and right field. They need to figure out who the catcher is. So I guess that brings us to the sort of what we said we would talk about a little bit today, which is what are the biggest stories going in to spring training? And I know you're writing about this tomorrow, but as a little bit of a sneak preview for those joining us on the podcast, we're always grateful for that. Where do you start with the storylines on this team?
In terms of the ones that really matter, like, look, the bullpen's good. Who's going to be in it? You know, is there one or, you know, one spot maybe available? Well, whoever it is, that bullpen appears like it's going to be pretty good, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking maybe they could find a way where they would just pitch the bullpen all the time, you know, because that's how good it looks like it should be. And again, is there a spot or two available? You have to think the answer is yes, only because the idea that, you know, the eight guys that are targeted for the bullpen right now,
right,
that they're all going to make it through spring training, you know, healthy and able to be ready on opening day seems to be pretty unlikely. Just like the idea that you kind of know who the five starters are going to be right now, which I'm sure you're going to get to in a second. But again, things happen during the spring, and, you know, it's always good that they've got depth in the rotation, which I think they have. I mean, I'm not saying they have depth in terms of like they have, you know, seven number one and number two starters, but it seems like they have at least six or seven people who you could put out there in the rotation and, you know, not go, oh my gosh, what is that guy doing out there?
Absolutely. And I'll get to the rotation. But my thing on the, starting with the bullpen by saying, you know, it's not my top storyline, even though it's probably the strength of this team, is that as long as Kirby Yates doesn't get hurt and Emilio Pagan doesn't get hurt, you know, and Drew Pomeranz doesn't get hurt in spring training, whoever's in that bullpen, you know, it's going to be a good bullpen. And then I would, like you said, I'd say almost the same thing as the rotation. Paddock, Lamet, Richards, whatever you want to call them, 1, 2, 3. You know, I think that there's a lot of excitement, by, you know, for the Padres about those guys and the steps that they can make this year, all of them with the Tommy John in their history, Chris Paddock very young, Lamet still inexperienced. Richards looked really good, but, you know, was erratic in his four starts last year, those limited starts. I think there's a lot to be, you know, I think it's legitimate. Is it Cal Quantrill or Joey Lucchese and Zach Davies? Which two of those three? I don't think it really matters. So that's not one of my top storylines.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm going to start in the outfield. And is Trent Grisham good enough to be essentially an everyday player? And by that, a guy who has .330 on base percentage and is, you know, patrolling center field at Petco Park and elsewhere in a quality manner. I think that's huge. Because they got him and Tommy Pham, obviously, to increase their offensive productivity. Get on base, provide a little power,
right,
score runs.
It feels like we talk about that every year, every week, every day almost. Find guys that can get on base.
Yep.
And I'm really going to believe in the San Diego curse if Tommy Pham comes here and can't get on base. So, you know, you figure he's a lock in left field. Grisham's a big question mark. I mean, he's young. He hasn't been an everyday guy in the big leagues before. Is he ready to take that big leap forward and do that now? I mean, obviously with Margot gone, that was sort of the platoon maybe that we were maybe thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
The signing yesterday of Juan Lagares is interesting to me only because he's such a good defensive player that he's someone that could factor in maybe as a fourth or fifth guy out there. And then, you know, there's the storyline that never, ever, ever ends, which is Will Myers. Where does Will Myers fit in? Are they going to continue on with Will Myers? Are they going to eat the contract? I mean, to me, that's one of the, again, one of the big, if not the biggest question about this team is, what are they going to do with Will Myers?
Well, and I would say that it's not my big question, even though it's a big story. It's just the thing that hangs over this team. You know, the fact that they made it basically their priority, the unspoken number one priority of the offseason, and they couldn't get it done, was to move a good portion of that contract and try to get something back in return. But Will's going to be here.
But see, there's the next step to me. Is it worth it to have him here when you don't know that you can, you certainly can't count on him? Even he could have the greatest spring since John Roscos or whatever that guy's name was. I think I got that right. Way back in the day. And then the guy, we got to have this guy on the roster. And he ended up like 1 for 30 and they cut him and that was it. But Will Myers could have the greatest, he could look like Mike Trout during spring. And are you really going to buy in that come April or May or June, that's going to be the Will Myers you're going to get? That would be pretty bold of the Padres to do that. The other part is, and I've talked about this with a couple of people, is there a point where you just have to say, look, we made a bad decision signing Will Myers to this big contract. It hasn't worked out. We need to just eat the $60 million and get him out of here.
That point's not here yet because of what is undeniably Will Myers' ability. And I'll go a step further. He could look like Mike Trout in April and May, and would you have confidence that he was going to do so in June? So, I mean, you know, but that's something that they are going to have to kind of live with because they couldn't They couldn't move him. Are they still trying? Yeah. But here's the deal. Like, the teams that have players that they want don't want Will Myers' money. I mean, if you really want to be – like, the Padres were legit in on Will Myers until the Dodgers got in. And at that point, it's a no-brainer with the resources the Dodgers have. The Red Sox wanted to reset on the luxury tax.
Right. You mean they were in on Mookie – you mean they were in on Mookie Betts, just to clarify that. Right. Okay.
Yes. And those teams – the Padres don't have room for eating Will Myers' contract. They don't have room for adding a big contract without getting rid of Will Myers. So it's a situation that just isn't going to go away. And it turns out that Ron Fowler was right in the beginning of the offseason when he, in the same comments in which he said, heads will roll if they're not improved. He said, it looks like we're going to be keeping Will Myers. I think he might have said something. At least it sounded like stuck with. But turns out that is indeed the case. As hard as AJ Preller tried, it's an awkward situation. Look, like I said, there's no denying that the guy has talent. But and your question is a valid one to revisit every once in a while. Like, okay, I mean, now he's just taking up a roster space.
Right.
Now you're just having to fit him into the lineup. I mean, at some point but that is a boatload of money, and they worked so hard to get out from under all that dead money of the past bad decisions.
Yeah, but it's look, it's not my money. It's easy to say it's a boatload of money, and yet it's not. I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, you're talking $20 million a year on a payroll that could be up, should be up around 150 or whatever. So yeah, it's a boatload of money, but they've eaten money in the past. I mean, you can go back to some of the guys they signed, like a Josh Johnson. I mean, that was, $10 million for a year or 2 years, whatever it might have been. There's a whole bunch of instances, and I guess it comes down to what's the priority. And at some point, if the priority is you're going to do everything you can to be the best team you can be and have the best players, and if Will Myers isn't one of those best 26 guys, then you know what? You just got to eat the money and say, look, we made a mistake, and we hope that we don't do it again. Eric Hosmer is getting $144 million over 8 years. Right now, that looks like a mistake too. I'm not saying they should eat the money, but they need production. They need more production out of Hosmer as well. So I think it's easy to say for me to say they should eat the money, but I think you can make a pretty good case. I can make a pretty good case for it if that's what it comes down to.
At this point, and I'm arguing with you about I don't know if you call it semantics, or I would call it silly, that's for sure. At this point, there's no chance he's not one of the best 26. Now, it's no less ridiculous that you'd be paying your 26th man $20 million.
Right.
Eat that $20 million. I just wanted to clarify that. Will Myers, I there's just not any chance that he's not one of the are we going to say, the 13 best position players on the team. I don't see it, because you have to have something better. Does Juan Lagares tear it up in the spring and show whatever it was that saw some dips in his offensive game, which has never been sensational or the part of his game. What's his spring show? Josh Naylor, is he ready to actually be a viable right fielder? Because that's where Will is going to get his shot. So, in terms of your rotation in the outfield, it depends on some other people too. But I do not believe, with this, how hard they have worked to get out of this money, that on the table right now is eating the $20 million.
No, that's fair enough. I'm just saying you can make an argument that they need to – that at some point they need to do it.
Jay, you're right about a lot of stuff. So one day you're going to be able to say, yep, should have done that back when I first said it.
All right, let's keep moving along. What are they doing at catcher?
Well, I was just talking to Austin Hedges today. That's a story that will be in Wednesday's paper. Probably hits up to you, but might post later today on Tuesday as we record this. Weird. Here we are again. Same replay last spring. Is it Hedges? Is it Mejia? Is it Hedges? Mejia? How's the split of time going to be? That's what, right? Look, they'll still take offers for either one of them, but right now you're in the same situation, and it's a spring training competition. How much improved is Francisco Mejia behind the plate? It's only going to get so good. And how much better is Austin Hedges at the plate? I don't know that you can say it's only going to get so good, but the Padres need it to be a certain amount of good. It can't be a $1.95.
Right.
Well, we've been saying this forever. That's what the weird thing about this. Now, I talked to Austin, a little sneak preview. You know, Austin's pretty, you know, he's a guy who's not afraid to say he's the best catcher in the game, blah, blah, and that he still should be out there even. He owns it. He's got to be better. He knows it. He's going to try again. There's not much more that Austin Hedges can say about it.
Right. But he's, you know, and the thing is, he's going to be 28 years old this year. So, I mean, it just feels like if it's going to happen, it needs to happen pretty soon.
If the team around him is better.
Right.
And he's slightly better.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy you can tolerate.
Yes.
That's all the Padres want.
I know,
which is actually one of the most frustrating things for them. They're not asking him to be JT Realmuto. They're not asking him to be Yadier Molina in his prime, or even Yadier Molina now. They're asking him to be a guy who's not an automatic out, who maybe gets the pitcher up, who extends an inning. They're asking him to bat 220, 230. That's all they're asking because of what he brings behind the plate. Though another aspect of my story will be, you know, another reason for the urgency here, Austin, is they're going to take that whole receiving thing away from you probably.
Right.
In the next couple of years.
In other words, Austin's made a lot of his career out of the fact that umpires are terrible. And so, you know, you call it pitch. People love to call it pitch framing. I call it bad umpiring. But that's another.
You can be a one dimensional catcher after that, but you can't be. It can't be the one dimension that Austin has.
Right. Now, do you think
they're talking about guys just taking the ball like in a different type of stance, even, you know, get like eliminating base running because like receiving will not be important.
No, that's true. I mean, you could. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That's for we could do that another day.
But Austin has definitely thought about it.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, do you think there's an extra guy on the roster this year? We got 26 instead of 25, and it has to be a position player, if I remember the wording correctly.
Jake Cronenworth, Javier Guerra. Now, they've already declared that Javi Guerra, who has no options, by the way, so in terms of, you know, the flexibility with him in the, you know, roster, Javi Guerra, they've already declared him as a pitcher. I don't know. I got to look into that. Like, could they call him a shortstop now or a utility infielder? They can call Jake Cronenworth that. So I think that is a fascinating, I don't know if it's one of the biggest storylines, but
right.
I think it's a very interesting storyline in spring.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And you see something like that more than, say, keeping a third catcher.
I do at this point, though. It's on my list of questions that will be asked early in camp and then monitored throughout is, you know, Luis Torrens, who, you know, showed some improvement. And, you know, he's not either one of these guys, Mejia or Hedges, with their tools, you know, offensively, defensively, respectively. But, you know, is he valuable to keep around? Sure, I guess. I don't know if he can play first.
Right.
You know. Austin Allen might have been a nice, viable third catcher, but I do believe that with the acquisition of Cronenworth in particular, the guy who came over with Tommy Pham, who plays two infield positions, the middle ones, and then is a pitcher, and I guess, pretty darn good that, for being a multi-position player, that was the idea. Let's see how this works.
Yeah, no, I think that's fascinating. All right, we're almost I hate to say we're out of time, but we are almost out of
for prudence's sake, not lose more people.
Right. But so the last thing that I think we should talk about and I'll ask you about is what can we expect from the first spring training where Jace Tingler is in charge as the manager of a big league ball club?
Well, I think he and his staff, and so you're talking about like Bobby Dickerson coming in, Skip Schumacher, who's kind of, you know, he's a taskmaster, and I think he's now the associate manager, a little more freedom and responsibilities. Wayne Kirby, guys who've been around and have been around big-time players and all that. I mean, I think you're going to see a little more, and this isn't to bag on Andy Green or any other manager or anything. Like, it's just to say discipline and fundamentals, super important to these guys. Now, there's only so much discipline you instill with major league ball players. There's only so much new tricks that you give to the old dogs. But I do believe that from the stories I've heard of when Tingler and coaches like Dickerson have traveled around and have met players, there's like this no-nonsense. There's like, hey, we're doing a restart here. You're going to do it our way. I do think there'll be some different types of drills and some things that are important. And Jace Tingler, big on, you know, advancing runners, on base running. And so I am going to, I have notes to myself to just constantly keep an eye on, hey, what am I seeing different that they're working on or like emphasizing maybe a little more and ask those kinds of questions. That's it. We don't know much about Jay Singler, do we? So that's it.
No, I mean, and I feel like, you know, you wrote the big long story about him after visiting him back in the Kansas City area, which told us a lot about his background. And, you know, we had another, I don't know, 1500 word Q&A with him this week, but you're right. It still doesn't mean that we know a whole lot about him. And I don't know, you know, I don't know when we'll find out. Spring training is long. The season is long. Spring training feels interminable, and it's just getting started. So
I always explain to people about spring training. They ask me, so what's spring training like? I go, it is awesome. It really is. Everybody's in a good mood. It's there's a lot of optimism, and you learn a lot of things. The weather's great, and it's great. It's baseball, right? And then the season starts. Because it is. It's a lot of long days. Goes forever. It's you know, you get to a certain point where these games are just meaningless. It's ridiculous. And then, oh yeah, here comes 6 months of nonstop games.
Right. Right.
So that's spring training.
Hopefully those games will be more meaningful later into the year than they've been. So anyway, Kevin, always good to get started again. And we will do this again next week and see how the first week or so of camp has gone, and we want to thank everyone for joining us again, and we're looking forward to doing this throughout the season as the Padres move into 2020 with their new brown uniforms and their new spring training caps.
Read about it in the Union Tribune. All right, thanks everybody.